Hello and welcome to the first edition of this unnamed podcast. I'm Tyler Bischoff, and with me is Mike Grimala over of RunRevs.com. I'm over at Mountain West Connection, MWC.com. We're going to be talking all UNLV, and obviously Mike at RunRevs does all UNLV, but over here at Mountain West Connection we got everything. But this is just UNLV and pretty much, at least today anyway, just basketball. I don't know, we might wander into other things at other times, but we're sticking to basketball most of the time. Mike, what's your Twitter handle?
At Mike Grimala.
Okay, yeah. Follow Mike. I'm at Bischoff_Tyler. And you can find him at runreds.com, me at MWC.com. But today, we're talking UNLV. We'll get to Kansas. We're going to talk some Chris Wood. Might go back to a little bit of Wyoming as well, and also what Doug Gottlieb had to say about Cody Doolin a week or two ago. But starting with Chris Wood, since the Arizona game, it's been three games. He's, I think, averaging 22 since then, over 10 rebounds. Hell, he's made 11 of 11 free throws in those three games, and he's shooting, you know, 66%. I mean, he's on fire. To me, what it looked like was when they played Arizona, and he said this in the press conference afterwards, Dave Rice said that they couldn't guard him, that Brandon Ashley, Tarzewski had no business guarding Chris Wood. He understood that, and he went after Arizona. I think since then, that's sort of been his mindset, that nobody can guard
him. And if you look at Chris Wood, just the measurables and the skill set, I would think that you would say that there aren't many people in college basketball that should be able to guard him. When you look at a guy who's 6'11", can, you know, sort of put the ball on the floor, face up the way he can, could score in so many ways. I don't think there's a lot of guys that should be able to guard him. It may have taken him a while to sort of figure that out and apply it, but I think he's starting to see that.
Yeah, and the weird thing about the Wyoming game, though, is Chris Wood attacked Arizona, and Southern Utah, but Chris Wood went after Arizona off the bounce. He had, I think, his first two touches of the Arizona game, he caught it at the three-point line, pump faked, and drove. Now, against Wyoming, the way Wyoming was playing ball screens, they just left Chris Wood open because they were trying to take away penetration to the lane. And Chris Wood shot the jumpers, and he knocked them down, which we haven't seen. And I almost think it's a bad thing that Chris Wood made all those jump shots, because it keeps him from thinking, okay, I need to get to the rim to score, which in the long run, percentage-wise, Chris Wood's not going to beat you hitting jump shots. Chris Wood's going to beat you going to the rim.
And I read your piece about that. I saw, you know, a couple plays where he caught the ball on the pop, and there was some space in the lane if he wanted to put the ball on the floor and drive in. I see what you're saying. I think that he's a guy, he's never shot the ball as well in games as he has in practice. He's a good, I maintain that he's, for a big guy, you know, he's a good shooter. If he's open behind the three-point line, those are shots that I usually am comfortable or would be comfortable with him taking. The two-point jumpers, I would agree. That's when I would rather see him in the paint, putting it on the floor and driving in, or, you know, backing down. I'm not so sure I get caught up in him, you know, shouldn't be shooting at all.
I think he did so well in that Wyoming game, and it's only been half the season. His three-point percentage went from 21% to 31% in one game. He had a 10% jump after one game. I don't think he's going to knock down 30% of his threes the rest of the season. If he can shoot 33% on threes, absolutely. He should take three or four a game. That stretches out the defense. It makes him tougher to guard. But I think he's tough enough to guard as it is. And I don't think in Mountain West play there's going to be very many defenders that can, you know, take him on and stop him from getting to the rim. I mean, Arizona couldn't do it. Larry Nance at Wyoming couldn't do it. I don't know who else in the Mountain West besides San Diego State just as a team that's really going to take him away from getting to the rim, which is where he's going to be at his best. And if he's going to knock down the majority of his free throws like he has the last three games, then he's going to get to the line more. if he's going to make some of the threes, you know, over a third of them, I'm okay with it. But I still think it's a bad thing that he made so many jump shots just because his mindset goes from, I need to attack Arizona to, oh, I can knock these down. I should keep shooting them.
Yeah, I get it if you think it's a mindset issue. But I think that's something that the coaches can always stay on him about. I just think that, of course, you would always rather see him around the basket because there's no one with that kind of length and that kind of leaping ability that's going to be able to give him too many problems down there. But at the same time, if you're going to get teams that defend him the way Wyoming defended him, basically, you know, daring him to shoot, giving him, you know, all that room and just leaving him out there just all alone, if he's behind the three-point line and it's there, I don't mind him, you know, letting it go two or three times a game. Especially if he starts making them more consistently, the way he's been shooting this season, that defense that Wyoming played made sense because he hasn't been shooting well. If we see the shots start to come around, as we've seen in practice, I would be comfortable with him, you know, taking a couple. But yes, you always want to see him around the basket.
Is this his last year at UNLV? Is he gone to the draft after this?
I haven't asked him about it. I haven't talked to him, but I would. It's got to be. If anytime you're a first round pick or projected to be a first round pick, I would never think anyone should stay for another year. If you're a first rounder, you should probably be gone.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think if he plays like this, if he averages 22 and 10 the rest of the way, he's gonna go for sure, and he'll probably be a top 20 pick, no doubt. But I don't think he's going to average 22 and 10 the rest of the way. It might fall off to, you know, 16 and 8.
The Mountain West will always wear away at those averages. He'll probably end up, you know, a little bit lower than what he's doing right now. But, yeah, I think that most mock drafts, you know, you're seeing him entrenched in the first round, like in the mid-first round in the low 20s. And obviously he's got the NBA measurables with the length, and he's got the athleticism that they like. I wouldn't see him. Once the NBA sort of gets their hands on him in the, you know, pre-draft workouts, or once he starts hearing, you know, those projections, I don't think there's much of a chance that he would come back for another year.
All right, UNLV is going to Kansas on Sunday. Weird conference game, non-conference game after conference play's already started. But Kansas they're 10-2 right now. They lost to Temple pretty badly, who UNLV actually played pretty well against, and that Temple win, at the time it didn't look like a big deal, might end up being one of UNLV's best wins and could be a big deal come tournament time since Temple's on the bubble too. But Kansas, it's at Lawrence. Jayhawks are still top 15 team. When I look at this, I think there's one thing that UNLV has a massive advantage, and that is defending the rim. Kansas is terrible at the rim. They're in the bottom 50 in field goal percentage at the rim. They're in the bottom 50 in terms of their shots getting blocked, which UNLV is top 10 in both of those categories defensively. Perry Ellis is a good, very good player for Kansas, but he's not a guy that goes down low and gets baskets at the rim against good post defense like Okonobo and Chris Wood will be. He's not Larry Nance. He's not going to go dunk on everybody six times in the game. But he can play a little bit more outside, can do some more face-up stuff. To me, that's a big deal because UNLV can basically, I'm expecting them not to allow but like 10, 12 points in the paint against Kansas, and I think most of those will come off transition.
Yeah, I mean, those. You definitely expect. What do you think, man zone? What do you think we're going to see? What do you think would be the best way for UNLV to go in this game, considering the way that they match up with Kansas? I mean, they've got Wood, who I would imagine you would see on Ellis. You've got Okonobo, who I imagine would see most of his time on Alex. How do you see it playing out?
I think they got to play man. I mean, if you look at Kansas, you know, Frank Mason, their point guard, is pretty good at getting into the lane, but he's not shooting a very high percentage, you know, inside the 3-point arc. Seldon and Oubre can both get into the lane too, but not really as well. I don't think Kansas has the skill set to play that UNLV play zone. I think they have the skill set to where you've almost got to play man to man because they can shoot threes. I think they're shooting it's 38 or 39% and Frank Mason and Oubre and Brandon Green off their bench are all over 44% from three. I think you've got to play, man. I don't think they can really afford to play zone.
So it's a weird thing. I was kind of looking at the stats earlier. The weird thing is that they are highly ranked in three-point shooting. I think they're 33rd in the country in three-point percentage, but they just don't shoot a lot of threes. I think they're 301st in attempts.
Yeah.
So I think you man them up. If you force those guys into the lane, and then you've got, you know, Wood and Okonobo, you know, sitting back there against guys who have had trouble finishing at the rim. And I think UNLV, like you said, points in the paint should probably favor UNLV by the end of the game.
Yeah, and with Kansas shooting threes and UNLV defending the three, you know, we all saw the Stanford game, the Arizona State game, where UNLV just got roasted giving up three-pointers. Since that Arizona State game, opponents are shooting 26% from three against UNLV. And if you take out the St. Catherine game, because I think St. Catherine was like 4 of 30 or something stupid like that, it goes up to 28%. But that's still, if you can hold your opponents 28% from three, you know, UNLV's sort of fixed that problem to a degree. And they've done it a lot with, they just switch every ball screen between their guards. They just switch it. It doesn't matter who it is. And they haven't faced a stretch four since Arizona State, but Kansas doesn't have a stretch four anyway, so that won't be a big issue in this game.
That's something I, having covered the team for, you know, this is my third season now, I had confidence that Dave Rice would figure out a way to do that. If you look at historically, that's something that he's been good at. His teams have been good at, you know, limiting three-point percentage and limiting three-point attempts. So, I mean, once they got that, I don't know if you want to say it's fixed permanently, but once they started focusing on it, and, you know, once after those, you know, the Arizona State game, once they started focusing on it in practice and really trying to shut down and clamp down on the three-point line, I was pretty confident that they would figure something out. As you said, they're switching a lot more now. I think I wouldn't expect that to be a huge problem against Kansas.
Yeah, I just don't think Kansas has, again, the matchups that really should worry UNLV unless somebody gets really hot from three and UNLV has to do something like double him off of ball screens. Maybe it's Frank Mason or whatever. But I think Kansas, I mean, they've got good enough athletes, obviously, to beat UNLV. I just don't think matchup-wise they pose as big of a problem as some other teams UNLV has played, like, say, UNLV or say Wyoming or whatever it is. But another thing with Kansas, they have about as many point guards as UNLV does right now. Devontae Graham, who was their backup point guard, he's had a toe injury. He's been out since, I think, like December 12th or something. And from what I hear, he's out of the walking boot he was in, but they have no expectation of him playing on Sunday. But with him out, they've got Frank Mason, their starting point guard, and then Wayne Selden, who's their starting two guard, are the only two guys that bring the ball up the court. And I think Frank Mason's been playing a ridiculous amount of minutes since Graham went down. Kansas's turnovers have gone up. I think their turnover percentage has like been over 22% for their last five games since Graham went out. But UNLV doesn't force the turnovers. And I know it's something you told me earlier this year, since Dave Rice has been here, they've never forced turnovers, but it's something Kansas has struggled with a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to switch up your normal defensive style to sort of attack that when you see those guys bringing the ball up. I don't know if you want to do anything differently. Yeah, but it's generally not a defense that forces turnovers aggressively. I mean, McCaw does some of that just on his own. But in general, it's not really a defense that's designed to, you know, create those type of plays. So, I mean, I'm not sure how that's going to factor in.
So UNLV is playing Kansas, one of the many major programs UNLV plays this year. But after the Arizona game, Doug Gottlieb, who called the game for CBS Sports, wrote about that game. And he mentioned Cody Doolin, and Doolin didn't have a good game. Didn't play very well. I think he didn't score, only took two shots, had five turnovers, didn't play very well. And Doug Gottlieb, to summarize what he said in there, he said that UNLV has struggled against the major programs like Arizona and Stanford and Arizona State because of Cody Doolin. Basically, he said Cody Doolin has really good basketball IQ, but when he plays better athletes, they're significantly more athletic than him, that they basically take away his IQ advantage, and that Cody Doolin struggles off of ball screens and creating offense and stuff like that. I don't think he struggles that much off of ball screens. I think he's pretty good at that. But this year, you know, he hasn't had a good game against any of the Power 5 teams that UNLV's played. His best was Stanford when he had 6 points on 5 shots, 4 assists, and no turnovers, which, you know, is an okay Cody Doolin game, but it's certainly nothing significant. I don't think we've seen him enough against Power 5 teams to kind of agree completely with the claim Gottlieb has, but so far, Gottlieb's not wrong about Cody Doolin.
Well, I think that it's hard, like you said, it's hard to say from, you know, just a few games that we've seen against the higher level competition, but for me, my concern when you start saying, you know, seeing Cody Doolin play these teams was defensively, and I was wondering if his defense was going to hold up. But I think the bigger issue in those games has been his offense. I'm not sure I'm seeing him get open enough. I'm not sure I'm seeing him get to the spots that he wants to get to while he's dribbling. I'm seeing him pick up his dribble a lot. I'm seeing him come around screens but not really do much with it. I don't know if you're seeing the same things. What do you think is the problem in these games? Is it just athleticism? Are these teams, you know, because he's not the most athletic guy. He's not, you know, quick feet. He's not the guy that's going to sort of break you down with a crossover, or he's not the guy that's going to, you know, just first step blow by someone. He's got to, you know, work his way open. He's got to use a little bit of guile. Are these teams too athletic? What are you seeing?
If you take the Stanford game, Cody Doolin had 4 assists in that game. He probably should have had 10. In that first half, Doolin created about 4 or 5 wide-open three-pointers that UNLV... UNLV had 3 air balls in the first half or something of that game. They all came off of Doolin getting in the lane and pitching out. Guy was wide open and just couldn't hit the rim. He played pretty well against Stanford. Didn't score a lot, but he did really well at getting in the lane and creating, but Stanford just put it on him that it didn't really matter. Mm-hmm. The Arizona game, Patrick McCall was a better point guard than Cody Doolin. And...
Yeah, I mean,
against Arizona and against Utah, it was kind of weird. UNLV went to Pat McCall ball screens in the first and second half of those games and not Cody Doolin ball screens. And that, I don't know, I think you tweeted that if you had told me Pat McCall was closing out a game running pick and roll against Arizona, you wouldn't have believed it or something. But in those two games, Pat McCall was a better point guard offensively and defensively than Cody Doolin.
And Dave Rice obviously thought so. He was stuck with McCall for the entire second half. I think that McCall, obviously a very different skill set. He can a little bit quicker. He comes around those screens. He can actually, you know, force the issue by, you know, taking a step or two towards the basket. He can force the defense to do some things. I think he's a little bit more willing to throw some high-risk, high-reward passes. He's willing to, you know, to throw a bounce pass, you know, into the pocket, passes that can be, you know, easily deflected away, or they can also result in a layup or, you know, an Okanobo dunk. So, I mean, a different skill set. And I think that – do you think maybe McCaw's style a little bit better against those higher-level teams or higher-level opposition?
It's weird because – neither McCaw or Doolin, like coming off of pick and rolls, have scored a lot this year. They've both, when they come off of them and have good games, they produce off of it in terms of assists. I guess against Portland, Cody Doolin did a little bit off of it late in that game. But it's weird to me because how often do you have a point guard that can be good on the pick and roll, like certainly with McCaw, but never really score off of it? It's almost always passing. And the same thing with Doolin. I mean, we haven't seen them come off the pick and roll, get a layup and score very frequently. It's more often, okay, we're pitching it to Chris Wood or we're throwing the lob to Okanobo.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know if it's something that's built into the offense, the way that they run their offense or the way that they're set up or the way that Dave Rice is sort of coaching them to run those plays. I'm not sure what it is, but yeah, it's weird that you mentioned it, that those guys not really looking for their shot in those situations. And I think McCaw is just more willing to throw those passes that could, you know, he's more willing to challenge the defense maybe. Doolin maybe playing a little safer. Is that what you see? Is it a small sample size?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I do agree with that. I think McCaw does take a little bit more chances because he'll throw. I mean, he threw that alley-oop from half court against St. Catherine in the second half. But, you know, he'll throw those lobs to Okonobo like once every three times he gets in the lane, and he's had some turnovers. I know against Utah he had some kind of dumb-looking turnovers coming off of a ball screen because he was, I don't know, trying to create something that just wasn't there, where with Doolin you'll see him back it out more often, but it also means you got to back it out and start it all over and try to get a look a different way. So I do think McCall, he's more aggressive on it, and you'll see a little bit more turnovers out of him because of that. Now, defensively, Doolin's not the athlete defensively, but Cody Doolin and Pat McCall are by far the two smartest defenders on this team, and it's not close.
Totally agree. Doolin, defensively, not the athlete that you would expect to be a good defender at point guard. I'm not saying he's a good defender. I'm not saying he's a great defender. But I'm saying he's not been hurting UNLV very much on that end. He knows most of defense is just knowing where to be, knowing what knowing where the ball is heading next, and sort of getting there and getting your teammates there. Doolin is very good at that. He knows where everyone is supposed to be. You see him talking. He's the guy that's, you know, usually talking out there and sending people to the right spots.
He's the only guy that's talking.
You can hear him during some games, you know, yelling at his teammates saying, I can't hear you. You guys have to talk more. I'm not sure if they don't, if, you know, they're just not sure where they're supposed to be, or they're just not used to communicating like that, but Doolin is definitely the guy who's running the show on defense. I don't know if fans really pick up on that if you're watching on TV or watching from the stands, but yeah, in practice and in games, Doolin is the guy who is running the defense.
Yeah, and with Pat McCall, he is by far the most talented on-ball defender, and he understands, I think, the way UNLV wants to play ball screen defense better than anybody. He and Doolin do, I think, the most, but McCall can execute it a lot better. And you know, McCall, it's been talked about with him a lot, coming with his dad coached him, and just, I guess, growing up with that background made him a smarter player. Pat McCall is going to be really good, and I don't think he's going pro anytime soon. I think it was Doolin has said it a couple times, saying Pat McCall is going to be a really good player for this program. I think he's probably going to stay all 4 years. And he's going to have a tremendous career at UNLV. I don't know if he translates into the NBA after 3 or 4 years of college, but he's going to be really good for UNLV for 4 years.
Which is coming into the season, obviously, with the recruiting class that was brought in. He was sort of the fifth guy, sort of the, I don't want to say he was an afterthought, but he was, you know, definitely not a Rashad Vaughn or Dwayne Morgan level of hype for McCaw, but ever since the very first practice, the very first scrimmage, you could see it. He got it. He was very comfortable. He very coachable. I don't know if that's part of the being a, you know, the coach's son, but he knows what the coaches want. He knows where they want him to be. He knows what they want him to do, and he knows how to apply it. He's been doing this since the first day.
And UNLV, and this is, I've seen it a lot with McCaw, they're really good with like being trained on how to talk to the media.
Yeah, you're not. If you get if you're talking to one of their players, you usually know the answer to the question before you ask it. I think they keep a pretty tight leash on, and that's Dave Rice's style. I mean, Dave Rice is not an off the cuff guy who's gonna, you know, fire off quotes left and right. He's not gonna, you know, a press conference is not gonna turn into, you know, improv with Dave Rice. He's a calculated guy in those situations, which I think, you know, helps in some way, you know, whether they win or whether they lose. He's always very calm. He's usually very poised. And I think that's definitely how he wants his players to act in front of the media.
After the Arizona game, when it was Vaughn, Chris Wood, and McCall were at the post-game press conference, and Chris Wood said, you know, Coach Rice told me that they couldn't guard me. And when he said that, Vaughn and McCall both looked at each other with their eyes kind of wide, like, oh, are we going to get in trouble for that type thing? So it's like, yeah, they know. And for those of you that don't know, I covered Ole Miss basketball the last 2 years with Jim, and I covered Marshall Henderson's 2 years at Ole Miss. It's the exact opposite.
There are no Marshall Hendersons on this team.
No, and I could probably, I've been covering, you know, for half a season and covered Ole Miss for 2 years. I could probably write a book on the differences of Marshall Henderson and Cody Doolin handling press conferences. It's that start. And even Andy Kennedy, the head coach there, I mean, he doesn't, he cares a little bit, but he doesn't really care what he says, and he'll go off on whatever he's talking about, and the exact opposite of Dave Rice. I mean, Andy Kennedy has a personality when talking to you. Dave Rice is, I've got seven talking points, and even if you guys don't ask me a question, if there's like a 5 second pause, he's going to start talking again with those same talking points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got his agenda of, as you said, he's got his talking points. He's going to get those in, and that I think it rubs off on the players for sure.
Okay, Wyoming game. UNLV lost their conference opener. I know you wrote about what Wyoming did offensively, but their dribble handoff play, good God, that was good. And UNLV had nothing for it. They just gave up dunk after dunk on that.
And I think the thing that you mentioned was the way that they would, you know, hand the ball off, also acting as, you know, a ball screen, hand it off,
yeah,
pick a guy off. Nance just open all night long, either drifting, you know, to the baseline for jump shots or going down into the post. And then, you know, is that something that UNLV is going to have to prep for from now on? Is it something other teams can try to copy, or is that something that, you know, sort of unique to Wyoming with their personnel?
I think it is mostly unique to Wyoming because, you know, Derek Cook was really good at it too, and so was Larry Nance. I mean, Nance was almost almost a perfect setup type play for Larry Nance and Derek Cook to just catch either I'm already going to the basket or I've got to take two dribbles and I've got a chance to dunk it. I don't think UNLV is going to run into that specific problem again, but it does kind of highlight an issue with maybe ball screens with defending the roll man if teams are able to pull away those shot blockers. Because that's what Wyoming did a lot of. They would have Nance and Cook be free throw line extended, and so Okonobo, Wood, or Dwayne Morgan were not in the lane. So when somebody got in the lane, there was no chance for that help side shot block. It was just, we're going to dunk it and nobody's there. I think not that specific play, but maybe as teams are able to pull them away a little bit more, UNLV might struggle with defending the rim. But you've got to have those guys that can catch it from 18, 19 feet and go off the bounce and just throw it down on everybody, which I don't think a lot of teams have. But that was a weird game because that was UNLV's best offensive performance except for the St. Catherine game this year. They scored 1.2 points per possession, and they lost the game. And Wyoming, that was, I think it was their best offensive performance of the season, and it was UNLV's like third worst defensive performance. It was a very strange game to see two teams that haven't been very good offensively this year in terms of efficiency have just tremendously efficient games, and especially Chris Wood and Larry Nance. I mean, they combined for both had 29 points, and neither one took 20 shots to do it. It was unbelievable efficiency in the Mountain West, which is supposed to be grind you down, inefficient, play some defense basketball. It's a weird start to the conference season.
Especially if you looked at, you know, most of the previews heading into the game or the predictions, most people had it, you know, at the low 50s. This is going to be a grinded out game. Don't expect a very entertaining New Year's Eve if you stay in and watch this game. But yeah, the exact opposite. I just really good offense, open shot everyone all over the court. Chris Wood unguarded, I think, on his first, you know, 19 points. Larry Nance, rewatching that game, Larry Nance, I think, took 17 shots. They're perfect shots. Like, they just wide open. He's either dunking the ball or he's, you know, shooting a hook shot that's uncontested in the lane. Not a lot of defense. I don't think anyone expected that.
All right. Last thing we're going to talk about is Dave Rice and can he coach or not. I'm slightly convinced every fan base, or at least part of every fan base, thinks their coach can't coach unless it's like Coach K or Bill Self. But I'm sure there's still fans that think they can't coach very well either. But basically, I'm convinced every coach has people in his fan base that say he doesn't run plays, whatever, blah, 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 doesn't coach, can't get his players to execute. But Dave Rice, can he coach? And there's two things I want to bring up. One we already did was the three-point defense since the Arizona State game. They're holding teams to 26%. The other thing is rebounding. Before the game against Utah, that was Dave Rice's talking point. That was his number one thing, was rebounding. We got to be better at rebounding. We got to do it against Utah, who's one of the best rebounding teams in the country. Rebounding, rebounding, rebounding. Since that game, it's been four games since then, UNLV's defensive rebounding percentage is 80%. That would be the best in the country if they did that for an entire season. Better, far better than Kentucky and better than anybody else. And, you know, Utah's coach after that game was mad that Utah got out-rebounded because it was the first time all season. UNLV has been unbelievable at defensive rebounding since Dave Rice started saying, we've got to get better at it. This is a really young team. They've only got three post players. They do have a lot of size, especially on the wings, but they only have three post players. I'm impressed at how well they've been able to rebound, because I didn't think they'd be a good rebounding team all season. I just thought they would struggle with that. But once Dave Rice started saying, this is what's important, they've been the best in the country at it.
And if whenever he talks about rebounding, I'm sure you've noticed, he always mentions, we need our guards to rebound. Our guards need to help. And I think if you hear him say that over and over and over again every time, you start to think, you know, it's lip service or he's just saying that. But they really are coaching these guards to get down there and help. And you're seeing, you know, Rashad Vaughn, he'll have, you know, six rebounds in a game or something along those lines. McCaw will chip in, you know, four or five rebounds. So, yeah, I mean, that's something – and that's sort of the trend, like we were talking about earlier. You see it when they went through that stretch where they were giving up a lot of open three-pointers. Once they, you know, they focus on it, they coach to solve the problem, they usually do a pretty good job of fixing whatever's wrong. They're doing the same thing with rebounding right now. And I don't know if that speaks to the larger point of how well the team is coached, but whenever they seem to focus on something, they usually come out and do a pretty good job of it.
John Kendrick had 11 rebounds against Southern Utah. John Kendrick had one of the best stat lines ever against Southern Utah. 2 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 blocks, and no turnovers.
I think Kendrick is one of the guys who is perfectly fine with not scoring a lot. Which is, you know, if when you have guys like that, I think that can have his place on the team. He's a guy who can pass the ball. He can do all those things. He's obviously not going to have a stat line like that every game, but he's a guy who can do a little bit of everything. He's a guy who can also chip in on the boards. He's a guy that in 2 years, I mean, he really hasn't sort of found his niche, but a guy who can pitch in everywhere. What have you, in terms of the coaching question. How do you see it? We mentioned that they can solve these problems when they pop up, but should these problems not be popping up in the first place? Is that something that speaks to their preparation? Are you just plugging leaks when this happens? It seems like, you know, if you allow a team to hit 12 three-pointers and you lose the game, but then you solve the problem afterwards, is that a case of too little, too late, or what do you think?
Yeah, I think if you take the rebounding one, I don't think there's anything to really blame Dave Rice on. I don't think they played any great rebounding teams until Utah. I think Stanford is pretty good, and Portland's got 9 guys that are 7 feet tall somehow. But they didn't play any unbelievable rebounding teams, and that was just sort of an issue of, okay, we're playing a lot of zone defense, we have a lot of young guys, and we don't have a lot of actual post players. So I don't blame that one. The three-point shooting, though, because I know when they had that second open scrimmage, they did that 5 or 6 minute segment of just 1-2-2 zone. And I asked Dave Rice about, you know, the corner three being open, because Dantley Walker just ran to the corner in that scrimmage and got about 6 open threes in 5 minutes against the first team defense or whatever it was. That, I think, was an issue that could have been foreseen. And I think Dave Rice knew it, because he mentioned it, that he knew that was the weakness. But it still happened against Stanford, and it still happened against Arizona State. And against Arizona State, Dave Rice talked about, you know, they've got good three-point shooters. They've got, you know, Jonathan Gilling, who can shoot those threes as a forward. And we've got to be worried about that. And UNLV looked confused defensively against Arizona State. So I think that the three-point shooting against Arizona State and Stanford, yeah, you can blame that a little bit on Dave Rice. Like, it shouldn't – I won't say it shouldn't have happened, but it shouldn't have been that bad. It shouldn't have been 11 of 22 for Arizona State, and it shouldn't have been, what was it, 12 of 20 for Stanford or whatever it was. Maybe – was it 14 of 20 against Stanford? Did they shoot 70%?
I would have to look it up.
I think it was 14 of 20. I think it was super ridiculous. But I do think a little bit of that is, okay, Dave Rice could have seen that coming and could have prevented it a little bit more. But ultimately, you're going to have problems. You're going to have issues that you can't foresee. And to me, the fact that those two things, they have done such a good job the last four, five, six games has just, I mean, it's been incredible how well they've been at that.
Mm-hmm. And it's also 14 of 20 for Stanford. It's hard to also separate how much of that is coaching and how much of that is, you know, it's your fourth game of the season and you're playing, you know, five freshmen in your rotation. How much of that you can coach the heck out of them, but you don't know how that's going to translate, you know, once they're out on the court and, you know, really doing it for the first time against a good opponent. So it's hard to separate how much of that is coaching and how much of that is, you know, players still kind of learning the system and having to do it for the first time on the fly. So
offensively this year with Dave Rice, I think there's been a lot to be desired. I think they've gotten a lot better, but when I kind of judge a coach offensively, I basically say, okay, take his players and what are his best three or four skill sets that his players have, and does he do a good job of highlighting those? Early in the season, I don't think he did a very good job of it, but now you're starting to see Rashad Vaughn get more plays. You're starting to see him get a lot more ball screens, too, where he can drive, and he loves to drive left, and he loves to spin. He's getting a lot more of that. You're seeing Pat McCall get a lot more ball screens, which has become one of UNLV's best plays. And you're seeing Chris Wood. We saw it some early in the year where he would get plays to catch on the block. But we saw it against Wyoming where he got plays to either shoot or drive, which I'd prefer him drive. But either one, I think he's just this year a lot better in the last three or four games at offensive play calling. But early in the year, I think there was a lot to be desired offensively in the play calls that they had and trying to highlight what guys are really good at.
I think that's been probably the biggest criticism of Dave Rice since I've been here is the offensive system that they're running and how he sort of can he meld, you know, different pieces together into a cohesive offense. And he's had in his defense, he's had some, you know, funky pieces that he's had to make work. He hasn't had a true, you know, ball handling point guard who could, you know, come out, who could make plays in the half court. I think Doolin is probably the closest thing he's had to that. Doolin and McCaw for the best point guard situation they've had in the past 3 years in terms of creating offense. But yeah, as you mentioned, how well can they tailor the offense? Now they do have some really talented offensive players. Vaughn is obviously, he can do so many things. He's really gifted. Wood is coming into his own. He's, you know, turning into one of the best big men in college basketball in terms of offense. Can they sort of take those pieces and turn it into an offense that can perform, you know, at home, on the road, against man-to-man, against zone, against teams that will run different types of defense, against teams that have different personnel? Can they be consistent and put up points and get open shots?
What was their best offensive skill set by player last year? Did they have a really good one?
By player last year, I think Bryce DeJean-Jones was probably their most talented offensive player, but they never – that's a case of a guy who's really talented. I don't think they ever really quite figured out how to use him in the best way. Most of the time it would just end up being, you know, DeJean-Jones with the ball against his defender, clear it out, see if you can make something happen off the dribble. Usually it would be a pull-up jump shot, and that was not good offense. But you're seeing DeJean-Jones now at Iowa State, integrated into the system a little bit more, putting up good numbers. So, yeah, I mean, that's sort of something we saw last year. That last year's team not as talented as this year's team. I think it's working a little bit better. Obviously, we've only played a third of the season, but I think it's just aesthetically from watching it, I think it looks a little bit better.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, just thinking of who was on last year's team, none of those guys really stuck out as, okay, that guy can do something really well offensively.
No, Birch was not an offensive player.
Yeah.
Roscoe Smith, not an offensive player. DeVille Smith was the point guard for most of the year, and he's a shoot-first point guard. Bryce was pretty much, there were times when the offense was basically give the ball to Bryce DeJean-Jones and see what he can create, but he was not the type of guy that is going to take on he would rather take on five defenders and try to score than, you know, run a pick and roll and, you know, throw a nice pass to the corner or, you know, create something like that.
All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for the first edition of our unnamed podcast.
Who needs a name?
Yeah, I guess that's true. We can just call it Unnamed Podcast. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm terrible at coming up with names.
Yeah, with two writers, why would anyone expect us to be able to come up with a credible title?
I'm terrible at headlines. I can't do it. Like, I can come up with some slightly funny tweets to tweet out or things that are puns or whatever, but I can't do headlines. I've never been good at headlines.
The easiest thing to do is just go AP style with your headlines.
Yeah.
We should go AP style with this podcast. We'll just call it Bischoff, Grimala Record Podcast. That's my suggestion.
Okay, yes. Lots of fun with our headline. You can I don't know. I hope people don't not listen because it's a terrible title.
Yeah, if you're not going to listen, make it on our merits of me being a bad podcaster. Don't do it because of the title.
Okay. Well, Mike Grimala, runrevs.com, Tyler Bischoff, Mountain West Connection, MWC.com. We'll have more of these, or we plan to have more of these, the rest of UNLV basketball season. Thank you so much for listening.